Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Please be seated, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Reyes, for being here. This is case number 2018-CA-5321-NC. It is Jack Kowalski, et cetera, et al. Versus Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital. Let's go ahead and take appearances, starting with the plaintiffs.
Greg Anderson, Nick Whitney, Tom Elegant on behalf of the plaintiffs, Your Honor.
Chris Altenburn and Patricia Crawls on behalf of Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital.
My suggestion, unless there's a better way of doing this, is just start on page one and proceed. And I think Mr. Reyes is going to put the feed up, but I need to turn on his authority to do that. There you go. You should have the authority now.
And to confirm, we're working on what is called working copy of instructions November 1st. 23 at 2:15 p.m. Is that the ones we're using?
Let us make sure.
Your Honor, do I need to pop into your Zoom and then throw that over? Is that what we're trying
to do? I need you to be able to put it up on the monitors so that the TV folks can grab the feed. So I guess yes, the answer to your question.
Okay.
Chris, where's the timestamp on this set?
I don't think there's a timestamp. They were just emailed into...
We have not been putting these in the record. In fact, at the end of the hearing, I was going to suggest that I don't know that there are any comments on the side that need to be redacted, but it might be simplest to just have my office create a PDF of this and do a notice of filing that this was what we discussed in the hearing for preservation purposes.
Greg, I'm going to forward it to you right now.
Okay.
I will say the following. On a going forward basis, my office is going to take control of making further changes to the document. So on a going forward basis, I will be the owner of both the jury instructions and the verdict form.
I'm confident that makes both parties happy.
And I know Mr. Reyes will get this up on the screen for the TV folks here momentarily.
Your Honor, while we're waiting, obviously the couple things you have under advisement will impact some of the instructions. I didn't know if you were...
I'm going to roll that in just a moment.
Okay.
You can take notes on rulings and things like that.
I can. Okay.
Well, while Mr. Reyes is working on that, this is what we're going to do with the two directed verdict motions that are... What I'm going to do for the two directed verdict motions is I'm going to continue to maintain them under advisement, and I am going to allow them to go to the jury, but technically I will keep them under advisement. So we need to have the verdict form and the instructions with the instructions for those two counts and places on the verdict form for those two counts. So that's how I'm going to handle.
Thank you, Your Honor. That there are drafts of those in there.
Unplug what? My cable? Mr. Reyes.
Yes.
At this point, I'm going to go ahead and... I think Mr. Reyes just had success. Okay, the first thing, I guess, is on page 4.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
It is entirely proper for a lawyer. We're going to put that where we normally would put it. It's not going to get top billing.
Well,
it
the will just only reason I asked for that was that, I mean, that this case has been a little unusual, that this issue has come up repeatedly as recently as yesterday afternoon. It's not normally in a spot that's highlighted, but... Except the ruling.
The instructions contain an instruction that says all the instructions are important and follow all of them. So I'm just going to put it where it normally goes. Page 5. Now.
Well, right after that, there's the during the trial you've heard evidence about policies and whatnot. And I'm not 100% sure there's agreement on that, but I thought there was.
Oh. I assumed if it was not highlighted or in a different color that it was agreed to. Was that an incorrect assumption?
That should be a correct assumption, Your Honor. I think this is where we ended up on this one.
Yeah. So then on page 5 is the during the trial you've heard testimony.
Okay. So my thoughts there, where it says the order ended the lawsuit in the dependency court at the end, should I also not add the statement in all existing orders? That order ended the lawsuit in the dependency court in all existing orders, period.
I have no objection to that. I wasn't sure you wanted that, so I didn't put that there.
Orient me again, Chris.
On page 5, top the first full paragraph at the very end, the sentence says the order ended the lawsuit in the dependency court, and Your Honor wishes to add what additional language? I'm sure you'll get it right. I'm trying to figure out.
And is that order by any chance going to be, is the court ever going to consider revising the original instruction on dependency court orders that was read halfway through? Well, we had a couple points if we ever get to that.
I mean, I think I told everybody when I came up with that, that if there was slight revisions we need to make before it gets into the final version, I would be willing to entertain them.
That was my understanding, Your Honor.
I'm not asking for anything. I would say that the final order in that dependency court is one of those, it's a plain vanilla one sentence order.
Well, in any event, what for this top paragraph, talking about the order to administer ketamine, I was going to leave that paragraph in and add the clause and all existing orders at the end of that the last sentence of that paragraph. And then I was going to leave in the next paragraph. During the trial, you have heard testimony about stress related. I was going to leave that in. In the following paragraph, that yellow highlighted language, to be clear, I was going to remove those sentences that were highlighted.
In yellow?
In yellow.
So are you going to, actually that whole paragraph then I think would come out, including the in these instructions.
And then we would pick up with plaintiffs think the standard instruction.
Well, no, that's just a comment that would come out.
Yeah, okay. I
believe that everything from the in these instructions down to the next request, which is the plaintiff's request for an adverse inference, I think that whole 9 yards.
Okay,
good.
I am fine removing the two sentences above the written in yellow language.
Right.
Isn't that repeated later on anyway?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. Yes,
about
yes.
9 times.
okay.
Let me pause it. I'm going to ask Mr. Reyes a question. Mr. Reyes, when I am reading the instructions to the jury, I'm going to want either you or Mr. Cottrell to put them up so the general public can also see them. So I'm going to ultimately have to send you or Mr. Cottrell a copy. Is it, would you need it in PDF form, in Word form? How is it going to be the easiest? And I'm going to make it large enough so I can see, so you're not going to be able to put like the whole page, or I guess you could, but you know, if you want to make it large enough so everyone can read it, probably you'll only get like a third of the page on the screen at any one time. So how should I send it to you?
PDF format.
PDF? Okay. Perfect. Okay, let's go back to the jury instructions. So this takes us to the top of page 6 and the question for adverse inference. Mr. Elegant, I'm going to let you talk on this, but my working thought is I am not going to give this adverse instruction. So since it's against, I'm going to be ruling against you on this point, give it your best shot.
Your Honor, this is a hold. Instruction, and really, and from the updates I've been getting, it sounded like there was some question of whether something had been lost, and then, well, maybe it wasn't, but then what I heard late yesterday, it sounds like there's still going to be some documents coming in that are going to be considered by the parties in the court that would show, well, was there something that should be there in terms of reviews or counseling and so forth, and if that turns out to be the case, and they're not there, then we would want the instruction. If there's no factual basis, then obviously we wouldn't request it.
Even if there's no written evidence of those two prior instances of counseling, you already have the reprimand that references those two prior instances. So the fact of those prior counseling issues with respect to Ms. Speedy is already in front of the jury. And I'm assuming that we're ultimately going to get the policy. I think we already put in the policy that talks about progressive discipline. And ultimately, I'm struggling with the concept of you know, is that really more of a collateral issue? What is that adverse inference going to give as far as a specific cause of action and an element in a specific cause of action? So that's why I'm pretty much against this adverse instruction.
I understand. I think I lack a little bit of the, I don't know what's going to be, I don't know what was produced last night or what's going to, or maybe it was produced this morning or is going to be produced. So I don't know what the ramifications of that may be, if anything. So I, on that factual matter, I think I'd have to defer to Mr. Anderson and Mr. Whitney as to whether this is still in play or might still be in play, depending on what else is produced.
Well, I mean, obviously, and this is why I wanted all the evidence to be closed, so we didn't have to change things on the fly on Monday, but circumstances warrant us not closing the evidence yesterday. So, you know, we might have to make a change on the fly. That's won't be the first time we've had to do that.
No, I and Your Honor, with I think everybody has a word of, I mean, if you wanted to take that and set it to the side, and if it's going to come back in, it's easily reinserted with whatever. It would need to be tuned up depending on what the issue, you know, what the document, missing document was.
Well, for now, I'm going to take it out.
I understand.
And Your Honor, practically speaking, then that will not affect our ability to make the arguments, not for adverse inference, but the fact that things are missing.
Well, Judge, we will be objecting to that.
Experience, but
I need us to stay focused on the jury instructions, and I cannot have us go into 4,000 different permutations of what ifs.
Understood.
I just, we don't have time anymore.
Okay.
I think we're going to, instead of calling it intentional restraint, I think we're going to recast it to say false imprisonment.
Yes, Your Honor. I think we agreed to that.
On the title, you mean?
On the title.
Yeah.
And now there's some language within.
In the body, we had used the standard language about intentional restraint, I believe, on occasions, and then had a sentence that said, this claim is sometimes called false imprisonment. There was a time when we actually had false imprisonment throughout because the plaintiffs wanted that. So I don't have strong feelings.
We're good with false imprisonment, Your Honor. And
I think that takes us to page 9. Was the next highlighting that I saw.
And this is just because I'm not really sure on the false imprisonment that I heard any evidence about hospitalization for the false imprisonment for injuries caused by that or the like. And I'm not anxious to have a lot of things where the jury has to think through about, gee, was there any evidence on something? The judge gave me instructions on this. So there are a few of these where I'm trying to narrow down the description of the damages.
And on that one, I'll go to Mr. Anderson or Mr. Whitney. We've removed some other things in other places, but on this one, I didn't know what the evidence was.
Mr. Anderson.
Off the top of my head, I don't recall that the life care plan had actual hospitalization. It did make reference to treatments and possible inpatient treatments. So that may still qualify. I guess we're talking about wording here. I'd like to leave it in simply because of the details in the life care plan.
Yeah. Okay, but this is with respect to the false imprisonment claim, not your other claims. So just false imprisonment. Because I think for other claims, this language definitely is in for other claims. But for false imprisonment
alone,
is Maya Kowalski going to need future hospitalization? Is there evidence that she's going to need future hospitalization or she's lost the ability to earn money because of the false imprisonment?
The 3 days in the hospital.
Well, the problem we have, and perhaps the court is correct, I'm sure the court's correct, that a omnibus statement of these damages elsewhere would cover it, but obviously this is for a number of things added together that totaled up into the entire harm to the plaintiff. See,
and that's where we're going. He wants an aggregate damage, and he can't have that.
I'm not aware of any evidence, Judge, that's been submitted.
My view of expensive hospitalization, nursing care, and loss of the ability to earn money with respect to the false imprisonment, it's not going to come. I'm not going to instruct on it. Now, I will instruct on it in other counts.
Yes.
But for false imprisonment only, I'm going to remove. Oh, I need to do this in blue. Okay, the next,
I believe it's the bottom of page 12, top of page 13, it's the same kind of issue for battery. The batteries involved here are Miss Beattie hugging and giving attention to Maya Kowalski that she found offensive, and then the batteries involved in the incident where the photographs were taken. And again, I'm not aware of a lot of these damages of hospitalization, medical care, nursing care, loss of earnings of money, that there's evidence that would allow the jury to award.
Well, I think disability or physical impairment stays in. But is there evidence of hospital or medical or nursing care or ability to earn money?
Well, you've got the hospitalization at Arnold Palmer, which I believe we have bills in for. And again, I emphasize, and I confess I don't know this as well. I haven't concentrated on it, but I do have concerns about the defense arguing later, if we take this out, that cannot be included in any further consideration, any further instructions down the road.
Okay. Judge, we understand
this. Mr. Anderson. We are sharpening our pencil today. There's no more. We're going to write with a really broad brush. We have to get this done. So, I don't recall evidence, and correct me if I'm wrong, that because of the battery, Maya Kowalski incurred hospital expenses, nursing care, or the ability to earn money in the future.
Defense concurs.
I cannot off the top of my head.
So, for battery, the hospitalization and medical will be out. Nursing care will be out. And the ability to earn money will be out. The language, when I say out, meaning I will not instruct on them. And let's go on to page 14.
I put in because it was your ruling. I was just making.
I'm so sorry. Where?
Well, at the bottom of page 14, the officers, directors, or managers was the result.
Well, no, before we get there.
Oh, okay.
I want to ask, at the end of the top paragraph, that top paragraph talks about what the jury does, if they have found a qualifying issue for us to determine punitive or to consider punitive damages. Do we then need a sentence at the conclusion of paragraph one that says, if you do not find one of those qualifying offenses, you do not consider the issue of punitive damages? So for instance,
yes.
I've sketched out the following sentence, if I can read my handwriting. If, on the other hand, you do not find for Maya Kowalski on either false imprisonment claim or the claim of battery on January 6, 2017, then you will not address this additional claim or something along those lines.
And I agree, especially in this case, since it's only involving two of the many claims, that would be a good thing to put in there, yes.
Because I want these instructions to be accurate, but also balanced. If we're going to tell them, if something on one hand, but if on the other hand, I think we need to have the complementary instructions.
Agreed.
So.
Yes. Your Honor, that's fine. And on the verdict form, that's the way they will be directed as well.
Yeah. On the verdict form, we actually said we separated them out count by count. It was harder on the verdict form than in the instructions to combine them.
The next additional phrase I'm considering is in the third paragraph, and it's the second sentence. The sentence that begins, if you decide that punitive damages are warranted.
Yes.
We will proceed to the second part of that issue and then add the following clause. After you finish deliberating. So I propose it to read, we will proceed to the second part of that issue after you finish deliberating, during which the parties may present additional evidence.
I actually thought about putting that language there and decided it was non-standard, so I didn't type it in. But I agree with the standard would be better with that.
Any problem with that, Mr. Elegant?
No, Your Honor, I understand what's going on. I'm looking at it to see if they're hearing that, what that's, I mean, we all know that if they say yes, they're coming back for a phase two, and that's what you're trying to convey. I need
the jury to understand that if they check yes on the punitive damages, there's going to be another phase to the trial.
Right.
Right. They're going to hear more evidence so they can decide that issue.
Because when these are read, they don't really understand there's not going to be a damage line.
Right. And because there is no damage line, I don't want them to be confused as to, well, do I need to add punitive damage money into a compensatory line item?
And so what is the language the court's proposing?
I wrote down after you finish deliberating. I mean, I'd have to, type it in to see if it flows properly, but something along those lines. And then I was going to leave in the language I had previously said, the officers, directors, or managers.
Right. Your Honor, I wonder if it should say, after you finish deliberating and return the verdict form, I will give you in a few minutes, something like that.
I'll work on the language, I'll wordsmith it, but the concept I will add.
And yes, I'm just thinking they'll know, because your comment about the comment about there won't be a line on there made me think of that maybe they,
So we would like to see something in the event you decide in favor of punitive damages, or however you want to phrase that, you will receive additional evidence.
I'm told the smoke smell is not a fire; it's just somebody with a microwave too long.
Okay. I was getting hungry. I could smell food.
Well, I smell the smoke. That's...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it does say right after that the parties may present additional evidence and argument. So
I may cover it.
Okay.
Greg's right, but I think it's there.
Let's move on. I'm going with the second DCA language for definition of manager as opposed to the what the defense wants, which is from other DCAs.
I think the defense wanted either one, Your Honor. It looks like there was an alternative.
No, I'm not going to object and say that one was better than the other. There were two cases and I gave you both.
Well, I appreciate that. Let's see here. That takes us to page, is it 17?
Yes.
The top paragraph. Remind me why this is in blue.
It's in blue because I typed it in. It's my recommendation, and I'm pretty sure that the other side doesn't want it. That's why they have the red lines ahead of it.
But
I just felt there's been testimony from Dr. Sally Smith, but there's never been any real, because we're so silent on Chapter 39, there's never been real explanation of what role she plays in the CPT and the extent to which the hospital has to coordinate with this. And that's why I put that here in front of the apparent agency part, because it's important that the jury not be confused about that during closing argument.
This is way beyond the evidence.
Well, it's not evidence, it's law.
It's not the way it's presented.
The first paragraph, I am generally fine with. I think we need to, on that last sentence, remove the word service. So for the circuit.
That's a statutory term, and that's probably confusing, yes.
Well, actually, we probably should change that to zone, because that's what the expert testified was the terminology used.
Yeah, I have no objection to a different thing. That, frankly, it's always been confusing to me that the DCF circuits and the circuit court circuits are different circuits.
And then I think we need to add in 2016 and 2017 was Dr. Sally Smith.
Okay.
The next paragraph will capitalize child protection team. I was okay with the next paragraph. Now, remind me and talk to me about the excised in the third paragraph, the language excised.
When we briefly discussed this earlier, you had indicated that you weren't bothered about discussing the services in the statute that related to medical diagnosis, but that you felt that the first telephone call had not been made as a consultation under the statute. So there are two references in that statute to consultation. This one that I've left here with the red line excision is one that, I mean, not only do I think it may provide help for the first phone call, but more importantly, I think during what we've heard about the EEG room and all of that, we're hearing conversations that I think also involve a consult. So that's why I wanted that language.
This is the paragraph, as the medical director, Smith was required to be capable of providing certain additional services. Doesn't that confuse what she was doing from the plaintiff's standpoint?
Well, this is taken from the statute as part of her statutory duties.
Your Honor, I think our problem is how does that go to, I mean, the issue for her is apparent agency, which is not, I mean, it's what the hospital held her out as doing, or she created the impression with the aid of the hospital, and the fact that she has these other statutory duties, in our view, doesn't really bear on that.
Yeah, she wasn't doing those for those reasons.
But for example, yesterday we had a witness on the stand to explain that Sally Smith was in a white coat when she was doing these services, not when she was an apparent agent of the hospital. And that's why we need this kind of thing.
Well, I tend to believe that this blue language is an accurate statement of the law, and it is a instruction that would be required for me to give, so I'm going to give it. the red excised, a child protection team may also provide consultation with respect to a child who is alleged to be abused. I'm going to leave that in. And then in the following paragraph, she was not providing these services as an agent of any hospital. I'm going to leave that language in. Now, when we go to page 18, that's when I start having a divergence of opinion as to whether the balance of those two paragraphs are appropriate. I would rather go back to the instruction I had given in the prior order about the Johns Hopkins. The courts already determined Johns Hopkins made the call to the hotline and they had reasonable suspicion. Whatever the language I used, that's where I'm going to go back to. So I'm probably going to take these two paragraphs out that are on page 19 and go back to the language I previously instructed on.
I think Your Honor, a couple of, going back up the line above that, this when she provided services in her role as medical director, she was not providing these services to the agent hospital. I mean, how's the jury supposed to determine that? I mean, that's almost instructing them that she's not an agent.
I tell you what, Mr. Elegant, I'll think about that a little bit more. Ultimately, what's going to happen, it will probably be sometime tomorrow. Hopefully, sometime tomorrow, I will circulate a draft, and then everyone can chop it up. You know, I kind of figure we're going to be working on this over the weekend, probably via email. Unfortunately, I think that's just where we're going to have to do it, because I don't have the ability to, I mean, I guess I could convene a hearing on Saturday or Sunday in the courthouse, but you know how unpopular that would make me with all the support staff around here.
I think email works. Your Honor, while we're on this, we're starting to put stuff in from Chapter 39 and so forth. How about one that says they couldn't hold Meyer longer than 24 hours? I mean, no.
You know, I tried to write that instruction. It's about a page and a half.
Again, when you see what I physically write,
okay,
then you can propose alternatives. But, you know, since I'm going to be in control of the document on a going forward, I think it's going to be easier for me at that point to, because I will know precisely who's made what proposed change. And if I agree, then we can add it or subtract whatever the proposed changes, and we'll go from there. But
for the record, yes, that statute would have given us immunity for a 24-hour window of this, and I tried to write that description rather like I tried to write one for you several years ago on the
Baker Act.
Baker Act, and it just got too complicated to add the 50 pages, so I quit.
Are you suggesting that you can't take what the legislature has written and put it into an instruction I can give to the jury?
On this one for 24 hours, it was just easier to go with unreasonable and unwarranted than to try to get an instruction on that.
Okay, page 18, and this is more a me issue. I have substantial difficulties with double negatives, so we're going to rephrase. In this case, it's undisputed that Dr. Sally Smith was not an employee. So it will probably read something about, in this case, the parties agree that Dr. Sally Smith was not an employee of Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital.
Okay.
It's just, I don't do well with double negatives.
No, although I
use them all the time, but when I'm looking at it or trying to read it, it just is difficult. That moves us to page 20. I'm I'm assuming this is your comment, Mr. Altenburn. For this claim, the medical negligence must have been caused.
Yes. This is not standard, but I realize because we have all of these other claims in here that where you can get these things that we needed to explain that the traditional medical malpractice is a physical injury.
I think the standard is going to be okay, so I'm probably going to excise this language.
Well, is Mr. Anderson going to be able to argue that the medical negligence has caused emotional stress because of various things not related to misdiagnosis or treatment of CRPS?
Well, isn't that for the jury? At some point, the jury gets to decide something.
I'm going to go back to the standard and instruction. Now, I know, and again, I will preface this when we talk about the negligent infliction of emotional distress. I know the defense does not want this. It does not believe there's evidence of it, and we have that multiple directed verdict motions. And so I've made the decision that we're going to include language in the instructions and the verdict form. So given that we're operating in that parameters, I would not find any waiver by Mr. Altenburn talking about this claim and agreeing to language in this claim because it's clear I have made a definitive ruling. So
thank you.
Is that enough protection of the record so we can just actually talk about
it? It is for me if it is for Mr. Elkett.
Yes.
Now, I think what I should do at this point is add the language that is proposed in pink, interacted with Jack. What I'll probably say is interacted with Jack or Beata Kowalski or both. I think that's probably a little bit more accurate. On page 23, I'm going to remove the statement, you may not rely on evidence that she heard about an incident from another person when she did not actually see or hear the incident herself. I'm going to remove that. And again, I know specifically that's something that the defense disagrees with. Now, with respect to page 24, I do think that there would be evidence of expensive hospitalization in medical as well as nursing care and treatment. So I'm going to leave that language in. Let's go to page 25.
Your Honor, if I can just ask on the interacted with language.
Sorry, what page are you on?
This is the top of page 22. The manner in which it interacted with Jack or Beato or both of them, language. If we're doing that and they don't have a physical injury, I'm concerned about what you're going to do in the verdict form for this, because normally there's a finding of, if they're combined, there's a finding of negligence for the first party on instructions on that, and then there's this claim. And I'm only kind of bringing up, I think this creates issues on the verdict.
If you think that we need to have a further interrogatory finding based on the court's ruling on allowing this claim to go, I certainly would be open to that discussion.
And Your Honor, the one observation I would make is, you know, because I know this came up late yesterday on pertaining to this, is that, I mean, Beata did die. I mean, that's kind of the ultimate physical injury.
But that's never been alleged as this or a part of this at all.
I think there's issues. I mean, there's certainly case law that talks about negligence with respect to suicide and how that that's very, 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 very limited on circumstances that, like inpatient or where there's a duty. And so I hear what you're saying. I'm not sure, though, that the death itself is qualifying, given given the status of Florida law on the duty issue in negligence relative to suicide. So I, unless there's something else, I'm on page top of page 25.
And the problem with this is it was that this is a special had to be pled and it wasn't pled for this count.
And what says the plaintiffs?
I thought these were in the initial and repled facts. I need to get my eighth amended out.
My recollection is this issue was not pled for this count. So for now, I'm going to remove. If you can point to where it's pled, I can certainly add it back in. But for now, I
think— Your Honor, if I could, we're on 6C, right? Paragraph 117, these physical injuries and manifestations of psychological trauma included aggravation of her CRPS. Paragraph 117 of the Eighth Amendment complaint.
Let me pull it up.
It continues on, weight loss, worsening lesions, and so forth.
Okay, so this is at den. What den are we at?
Ooh, 2816.
He is right that paragraph 117 does say these physical injuries and manifestations included aggravation of her CRPS. I was looking at page one, on paragraph 123 in the wherefore clause, or something in the request for damages that included aggravation, and I
it has to be in there.
Yeah, I did not see it there.
Okay, well,
doesn't it have to be in the warrant?
Perhaps when I was looking at it, I was just looking in the wherefore clauses.
I mean, my position is it's supposed to be in the wherefore clause, but you know,
well,
I mean that's
that's where you ask for damages, but.
Well, in an ideal world, yes, but. If we're talking about the question of notice, I am now looking at paragraph 117. So I'm going to change my ruling and I will keep in the discussion of aggravation or activation at this point. Okay. Keep in. Now let's move on to the negligent training issue. And I guess, has the plaintiffs changed their position at all on this, or are they still riding this horse?
I think we want to ride this horse a little longer. And there's always JNOVs and other ways to deal with the judge, but I remain concerned that you never know what you don't know.
Well,
I will defer to the. Oh, sorry.
I have detected a shift from negligent training of doctors and healthcare providers to a more generalized staff. So let's talk about that, because my inclination is to keep it to as it was pled, which is more along the lines of negligent training of doctors and healthcare providers.
But Your Honor, staff was pled. And again, I didn't hear this part of the testimony, but the reason we added it in here is because I understand there was some contention made that Ms. Beatty was not a healthcare provider, but was just staff.
Okay, well, can you give me a paragraph?
Oh, where staff is pled? Yes.
In this count, there were references to staff, but this count was this thing that had several different theories in it throughout. And that's been the problem when they started dropping this and dropping that. And, you know, negligent training of doctors is a medical standard of care, be it Ms. Beattie is a professional, but she's not a healthcare provider.
She's not.
And I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything that are complaints about the people in the cafeteria.
Well, and then let me, and I know this is forecasting what's going to happen on Monday, but based on the discussion yesterday, if this joint commission finding of whatever it was, immediate jeopardy, and I think Mr. Whitney told me yesterday that the finding was based on a systemic issue at the hospital having to do with patient safety and organization and stuff that was not just failure to, he might have even said that there was a failure to train folks at the hospital as discussed. I mean,
he did those opinions. I agree. I heard it yesterday. I don't think it should have come in. And all that discovery was done because you allowed it for evidence on the punitive damages claim at the end of the summer. This wasn't done because they needed more on this claim. They were ready to go to trial on this claim, they said, a year ago, April. And so I was listening to that yesterday, trying to figure out what it was really relevant to.
I don't want to get into it because there's so many issues associated with it. But if this report comes in or some discussion about the report, I'm having to, in my mind, envision how the jury instructions are going to look and what the evidence is going to be. So, you know, I'm somewhat handicapped because I think all of you know exactly what's going on, and I'm the only one left in the dark. So
we have a pretty good idea now, Judge, but we still await the defendant's providing of documents.
Well, that's supposed to, happen this morning, and then the deposition's going to happen tomorrow.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
The documents will be given this morning.
So I'm just in my mind having to formulate what the possible evidence is and how it impacts. And out of everybody in this room, I'm probably the one with the least amount of knowledge. Maybe Ms. Carls, you probably don't have the same knowledge as everyone else. But
I have some knowledge.
I know some, but probably not the deep history on this issue.
I understand.
She probably has more than I do.
Well, yeah, you probably also, Mr. Altman, probably don't have it. Mr. Elegant probably doesn't have it. But
I'll confess, Your Honor, while we're on this staff thing, paragraph 193 in 14C incorporates some earlier paragraphs, among them 170, and which is a part of 14A, and 170 refers to competence of its medical staff and personnel. So, again, we did plead staff. Plaintiffs did plead staff. And again, it continues on later when we talk about staff and some subsequent allegations that are incorporated. So that's why that came in. And again, I think I just heard this morning that she's not a healthcare provider. She's staff. So
we're sitting here. She's never been a healthcare provider.
For the record, we moved to collapse the pleadings into the proof on that count.
But we're sitting here at the end of trial. Everyone has rested, and the plaintiffs have not provided something that would provide a training theory for the doctors as professionals under a medical standard of care by the medical committees that you believe may be responsible for this, and a separate one for staff who are negligent, and they're citing cases about employees who are outside the scope of their employment or otherwise someone that someone's not liable for as an employer. So I just don't know where to go with this, so I'll stop.
Anything else, Mr. Elliott, that you...
Your Honor, I have no problem with putting some language in, if it's not already here, that says, you know, if you're looking at the medical, you know, please refer back to what I told you about medical malpractice standards. You know, there's no problem with that.
Well, for now, what I'm going to do is keep in the reference to staff. And if someone has objection to the language that I send around, hopefully tomorrow, I'm confident that you will, in legislative format, showing the strike-throughs and additions, any sort of proposed changes. I think on page 26, I was going to leave in the pink language.
I do not have pink language.
Oh, it's shaded on R&R's, I think, Mr. Anderson. Oh.
It looks pink to me, but...
The pink is only because I put a comment off to the side pointing out that I thought it demonstrated the problem with the whole concept.
But it's right now I'm keeping that language out.
Yeah.
And then the highlighted on page 27 in yellow, pink and yellow, I was going to leave in, and I would leave in the staff reference as well. So I think that takes us to
Damages on fraud.
The fraudulent billing?
Yes.
Your comment was, I took it to mean, you know, you just disagree, but now that I've ruled.
Well, I think the comment maybe reads longer than I've got, but it's on the screen. That not only they failed to prove, but I mean, yes, his policy that year came with a deductible. And when he was on the stand, he was asked about whether this deductible would have been paid for all the other things that went on in his family during that year. And he had no idea. And from looking at the Aetna run that's 900 pages long for these 3 years, it looks to me like even if you cut out all of everything from the hospital, the deductible was going to be gone. So there's no evidence that there was a deductible that he was damaged by. And he produced no payment whatsoever of a copay from any account, nor did he claim that he took it out of his billfold and paid it that way. So that none of that is here.
I understand that you believe that this claim shouldn't go. I know that. I've ruled otherwise.
Okay.
But so the comment, I think, was more of a renewal of the DV motion as opposed to an alteration of the
language. That's correct. If there were proof of all these things, that they could be on those lines. And on the, I'm not quite sure what we're doing with the lien. I agreed that they didn't have to prove damages of that, but I don't know what the jury's going to do if they get a decision about any increase in insurance carriers' lien rights against the plaintiff. How are they really supposed to do that?
Now, on page 30, where there was about 8 comments, that's kind of where I started getting lost in what you all are trying to say. So let's talk about page 30. So who wants to go first?
Your Honor, I think this isn't quite traditional, but I think in terms of dealing with a lien and the amount of a lien and so forth, that number C, you know, that is something that we understand the court would typically do after the fact. So in terms of that part, I think we're okay having subpart C come out.
How about the pink language in A and B?
Well, we were just talking about that. And you said that you were going to leave that in. So,
yeah, there was just too many comments there for me to.
I understand.
That's why I was trying to. Okay. So now we go to the intentional infliction of emotional distress survival claim. So I guess I'm not going to be as crisp because this is later in time and I've somewhat run out of time in my prep. So
that's okay.
I think we're going to have
probably need to discuss.
We're going to have more discussions about the next few comments.
On that first paragraph, I think we agreed that we were going to use the language during the time that Maya Kowalski was a patient at the hospital. Am I correct, Mr. Elligan?
Yeah, that's fine.
So the blue and pink language in that paragraph you all agree on?
Yes.
Okay, so then that takes us to the next page. Am I correct, or is there anything else?
That's correct. The blue language on page 31.
Now, and let's see, what was sent this morning?
The only thing I sent, and I sent it shortly before midnight, I'm sorry, was an effort on the suicide claim to put together something that would have both of those.
Okay. So that's a wrongful death, not...
That's
not
the wrongful death. Okay. That's
so
not.
I'll put that to the side.
Yes.
And
yes, there's no change in what... And here, what I've pointed out is, you know, if there's been all kinds of evidence in this case about maybe a negligent violation of the statutory Bill of Rights language or some internal policy, or that we didn't put her name on a door, and all of these things that they're being complained about, but they're not things that, if analyzed, would go to a jury as extreme and outrageous conduct without regard to whether it wasn't even intended to create severe emotional distress on the part of Beata Kowalski. And so because there is so much of that in this case, there needs to be something that explains to them that there are some things they can't consider for this, and a better description of what they can. And this was my effort to do that, because, again, this normally there's an incident, something that's a big trigger event that causes this in the case law. And this case doesn't have the big trigger. It's just got things going on for 100 days in the hospital.
Mr. Elligan?
Your Honor, my comments are there in red that, you know, this is, I think the jury hears this and they're going to basically hear the court telling the jury, there was just no big deal here. This was for the stuff wasn't important.
Mr. Anderson, I can only have one person talk at a time.
Yeah. The we just think, you know, these paragraphs are jury issues.
It is all contextual is the problem, Your Honor. It's all contextual. Any one of these things, pulling isolated facts out of a storyline and saying, well, we just think because we're, I guess, not the jury, that we should ignore this and then you should ignore that. This is completely and utterly for the jury to decide, and telling them what they should consider to be outrageous under those circumstances is invading their province. You know, I object strenuously to anything that does that.
So let me point
out,
this
is a rather key count.
Yes, and this is a key problem. And let me just use one example, if I may. Yeah. The lady that my partner here so nicely explained had a nice hat. She came into the hospital and didn't register and was bringing this semi-sanitary icon into a hotel hospital room. Let's assume that was negligence on the part of the hospital to let her get in. But you can't take things that aren't themselves extreme and outrageous conduct. You can't take 14 little negligent things and say, oh, that equates to an extreme and outrageous conduct that intends. That's exactly what they're trying to do. This whole context is to tell this long story made up of things that individually cannot possibly qualify for this, and then say, well, but if you put them all together, somehow they become an extreme and outrageous conduct. And that's just not the law. And the jury needs to know that.
I thought we had this decided when the court ruled on the directed verdict motions and on the summary judgment motions on these exact same arguments.
It was found that there was sufficient evidence of extreme and outrageous conduct to go to a jury. I just think that there's a pile of things that aren't that, that they need to understand aren't that.
Because,
folks.
Yeah.
Give me a chance to reread this, please.
Yes, sir.
Let me tell you where my head's at, and then I'll let everybody respond. Out of these four paragraphs in blue, I think I would go with the defense request number 3, but not 1, 2, or 4. So my current thinking is we would only instruct as to paragraph 3, which would include that sentence that, or that fragment of a sentence that is underlined as well. So that's kind of where I'm at. So, Mr. Altenburn, why don't you?
Your Honor, I mean, the whole reason I put that paragraph in was because I didn't want what's in the underlined language to be sent to the jury as an explanation. I mean, if you're going to add the plaintiff's language to that paragraph, I'll withdraw the request for that, because things that were relayed by her, things that Maya Kowalski told her father, that may or may not have been entirely accurate, she's 9 years old and upset, that he takes home in this game of telephone tag, and he tells his wife, and he can give us a general description of it, but we don't know exactly what we said, and we don't really know how she responded on that day, because she's never been able to testify about that. How can that be evidence that makes the person in the hall that was doing these things that got them upset, that's extreme and outrageous conduct intended to cause Beata Kowalski severe emotional distress? This telephone line is the exact reason why a lot of this stuff can't qualify for that. So if you're going to add that language, I just want to, if you're not giving the rest of it, I would withdraw it all.
Mr. Elegant, you heard my thoughts that I was thinking about doing 3, but with the underlying. Now also qualify that with Mr. Altenburn's request to not have it at all.
We're fine not having it at all. I mean, Your Honor, the extreme stuff is defined immediately above that in 410.4, 5, and 6. I mean, it's all covered how bad it has to be. So, okay, so we think the standard instruction covers it.
As long as Mr. Anderson doesn't argue that he can take 9 negligent acts and turn them into 1 extreme and outrageous act, that's fine. But he's not going to argue that when this case is closed. So, I mean,
to make it clear, closing for me.
Well, I've heard your trial. I'm sorry, but again, I want these, but if that's the ruling you're going to make, I'm going to have to say that I have to withdraw them, because it's worse to give them than with that than to have them all denied. So
agreed. Withdraw.
So given my ruling that I would do the number 3 with the inclusion of that underlying clause, you are saying you want me to remove number 3, and it sounds like the plaintiffs are okay with number 3 being removed, so I'll just cut it totally.
Okay,
so was there disagreement as to that last paragraph?
Oh, the final language is that I don't think the concurring cause language that's standard, that they gave enough thought to this being a stress case. And so the language extreme and outrageous conduct may be a legal cause of severe emotional stress, even though it operates in combination with the act of another. I think it's clearer to the jury to say, even though the act of another or some other cause also contributes to the stress, because I think that's what they're trying to explain.
We want to stick with the standard language.
Mr. Elegant.
Yeah, Your Honor, my note aside, as Mr. Anderson says, we want to stick with the standard. I mean, I quite frankly don't, I mean, grammatically it's different, but I'm not sure how much different it is in meaning.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go, I'm going to stick with the standard.
Okay.
On page 33, the pink box, am I reading that the parties agree?
I'm sorry, Judge, where are
you? Which page?
Page 33, under the instruction, which is 410.7.
Oh, yes, Your Honor.
The phrase, during the time that Maya Kowalski was a patient at the hospital.
Yeah, I think we all agree on that.
Yes, that's good.
Side note says that Mr. Elegant says it's okay.
And I do.
So that now we're going to the intentional infliction of emotional distress, wrongful death claim. Unless there was anything else on the survival claim.
No, Your Honor.
No, I think that's right. And as Mr. Altenberg noted, he sent some stuff over this morning that it kicks in at one point here, and that may be easier than trying to work through some of this once we get to that point.
I agree.
Well, it looks like that starts at 410.7. So
I think so.
I had made the same request on concurring cause, so I'm assuming you're going to stick with the standard language here as well.
I'm going to go with the standard.
Okay.
So does that take us to 410.7 or?
Yes, I think it does.
I think so. Yeah, I think all that stuff in red then comes right. and all comes out. Everything before from there on down to 410.7.
For the record, I had wanted what is in the current instruction, but once there's a ruling that it has to be dual, it just doesn't work. So
let me reread this alternative language that came in, I guess, at midnight. Just give me a second to read it again.
Yeah. So if they find no one that.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.